Welcome to the Face Rocker Podcast, number 46. It's been a little bit since our last one because we've been finishing up shooting Video Game High School Season 3, but we're done with that now and back in the studio. This week, we sit down with Playfight VFX. Playfight is a visual effects company that we've used. They're out of Toronto. They've done all the visual effects for Video Game High School. They're also doing some really cool stuff with Titanfall, so you may have already seen some of their work, and we talk about visual effects, the visual effects industry, and we really get into some cool stuff about, really, the kind of stuff that you're here for. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. I know a lot of you guys out there, you're like DPs, you're editors, you know, you're trying to get your reels out there, you're trying to get some work in this industry, and guess what? You're probably too busy worrying about making sure that your reel looks good to worry about building a website, but I have a solution for you, and that solution is Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform that lets you drag and drop everything in there to build a website in minutes. It's professional looking, it works across every platform, you don't need a credit card, you can just start right now for free. Use the promo code ROCKETJUMP and get 10% off of your first purchase. Again, don't worry about your website. Let Squarespace worry about that for you. You worry about making your reel look good. Let Squarespace do the rest. Anyway, hope you guys enjoyed the episode. And see you later. I guess that sentence ended on a high note. Welcome, everybody, to another Face Rocker podcast. Everyone's favorite thing on this channel. Huh? Huh? Am I right?
Yeah!
We are sitting today down with... My grammar order is bad because I'm operating off of very little sleep. We just got off shooting VGHS, all the action stuff. But we're sitting with Playfight. These guys, first of all, say hello, everybody.
What's up?
How's it going?
And introduce yourselves.
My name is William Chang. I am the VFX supervisor and founder of Playfight.
My name is Ryan Freer. I am the creative director at Playfight.
And my name is Brian Huynh. I'm one of the producers here at Playfight.
So enthusiastic, guys. I love it. Well, you guys know Playfight. You guys know Playfight and their work intimately if you've ever seen anything on Video Game High School, as well as a lot of our weekly videos. You guys are a visual effects company in Toronto. You do also your own stuff. You have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/PlayfightVFX, where you are putting out killer cool visual effects videos at a caliber that I think is greater than pretty much anywhere else right now. And what's interesting about all of that is that, you know, I think a lot of people on YouTube, it's like you get the perspective of, oh, these are YouTube people and they're making stuff on YouTube, whereas you guys didn't come at it from that perspective. You're coming at it from, hey, we're a working visual effects company and this is the stuff that we do. And so your industry level, like, you know, people are like, oh, Freddie, your guys' stuff is so good. It's like, no. First of all, if they think it's really good, odds are it's actually your stuff. And secondly, we aren't industry tested. Like, you know, we're not in shows, we're not like full on, you know, theatrical stuff tested, whereas you guys are an actual 100% visual effects company through and through. So your caliber work is always amazing and awesome. So I should start off, first of all, with how we met, because this is a hilarious and weird story with how we met you guys. Some of you guys who are familiar with online internet videos may remember a series of Call of Duty styled shorts, Fine Makarov and Operation Kingfish, which kind of came out of nowhere. What was the story behind that?
Well, I mean, Fine Makarov came out of a collaboration with Jeff Chan. Mm-hmm. He's a director that we work very closely with as well. And he just came to us, you know, through a friend, said, you know, I'm working on this Call of Duty short first person. And, you know, at that time, actually, we weren't officially doing any visual effects. Actually, we were just...
What, really?
Yeah, we were doing, like, motion graphics and, like, stuff for sports.
Wait, back up. All right.
So
this is going to be a long, meandering conversation that I out there will enjoy. But so when you say motion effects for sports, like, what is that specifically?
Yeah, like, so, like, all of us come from this... came from this company that did motion graphics and sports packaging. So if you, like, watch, you know, the Super Bowl or NBA... Or ESPN, you'll see like these, you know, transitions that fly by after, you know,
logos,
glossy logos. And actually, we were kind of the group that sort of invented visual effects going into that type of stuff. Like we would, you know, it was kind of almost like unheard of to see an explosion in like a logo flying by a camera.
So tell me about then. That kind of world before and after sort of what you were doing and you guys were doing.
Yeah, so before it's like if you showed these companies kind of like, you know.
And by these companies, you mean like ESPN and like?
No. I mean like motion graphics companies. Like if you want to get a job with one of these companies, you know, the materials that you use on your graphics should, you know, if they look glossy and they look like plastic, then you're in. You know what I mean? But if you do anything that looks remotely photoreal, it's just like you're in the wrong business. You should go do VFX. But, you know, we wanted to do, you know, I think we were all kind of VFX enthusiasts, you know, even before doing motion graphics.
Yeah.
But we did that for like a solid, you know, I did for at least 8 years. You guys were at least, five years in, and then we just like, okay, you guys, we want to do something different. We want to add visual effects and effects plates to motion graphics and see if we can create this hybrid.
So you're saying like instead of just glossy plastic stuff flying around, it would be like what, like particles and like dust explosions,
exactly.
And stuff.
And you guys may have remembered this thing called Art Beats. It's still around.
Yes,
but
Art
back
Beats.
In the day, Art Beats was the stuff. You know, it was really what you would get to do. You know,
it was the pre-action essentials.
Yeah, it's pre-action essentials. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was expensive too. It was like $300 a clip. It was ridiculous. But we started taking that footage, sticking it right on top or behind layers. And we kind of created this hybrid look with the stuff that we do.
And because, by the way, and so real quick, just as a quick aside, this conversation I can tell right now is going to be pretty much a walkthrough of the history of the visual effects industry as we've come to understand. So anybody who's listening or watching this who has interest in visual effects or interest in this industry should probably turn it up. I don't know, pay extra attention. Anyway, so what would the kind of stuff that you would make there, like how long would that, like, you know, just it'd be a few seconds at
yeah,
a
we're
time
talking,
right?
We're talking like if you blink sometimes you might not actually see what we've created, like it's, it's like, no, seriously, it's like, you know, 15 frame transitions, 45 frame transitions, and you know we're working with directors for like ESPN, ABC, who like actually care, you know, about the frame by frame, because you know they're showing these transitions 1,000 times during any given game, so it can't be obtrusive, it can't be like annoying to look at multiple times.
Do you still
times.
See your stuff?
Yeah.
All the time.
Wait, really?
All the time.
When did you make this stuff?
Years.
Like, we're talking like, ago. I mean, the latest stuff we did was for either the Super Bowl or for the NBA Finals, and they still use these god awful transitions.
And we also
that
did
we made.
A bunch of them for TV shows as well. I'm not going to mention what shows they are, but they've been running the stuff for 5 years straight.
like reality TV shows?
Some of them.
Yeah, like it's bad. But it's, you know, it, I mean, to today's standards, it still holds up.
Like once you get like your sick transition from like halftime, like the halftime report, like what, you're never going to change that, right?
You know, it's dangerous. Like you don't want to be running for at least, you know, I would say, you know, 5 years before you do, you know, a rebrand.
A change up, really?
Yeah, a rebrand. And like, there's big companies now that focus specifically, these are like multi-million-dollar projects.
Really?
You know, yeah, just to do a rebrand, you're like, you know, you have a devoted cast of about 10, 15 people just working on a rebrand for like 6 months. Not to mention, like, you know, Super Bowl, for example,
Super Bowl's going to be a new one every year, right?
You're right, and that's like a 3 to 4 month project for a day of broadcast.
Whoa.
So the elements are like through the charts. Like we're talking,
how much money are they spending on that?
Anywhere between like $500 to $1.2 million.
Whoa! Yeah,
so $500,000 to $1.2 million, $1.3 million.
Just on the little.
Yeah, it's crazy, exactly. And like we did it way too long, which is why we left. We start a company.
Oh, real quick, because I know everyone's wondering,
yeah.
what programs did you use, software, all that stuff for that?
The same ones.
Really? Which
same,
are?
Same programs we use for VFX today are 3D Studio Max, After Effects. We use Photoshop for all of our, you know, texture work. We use, for motion graphics. That's pretty much it.
Cinema 4D at all?
No. You know what? That seems to be like the program of choice. Like when we were moving out of that genre space.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Cinema 4D seemed to be the choice for everyone. Like, 3D Studio Max was little, you know, it was too complex.
They came out with a bunch of tools that weren't actually, we never had them. And then just as we were getting out of the motion graphics, that's when they really came in and started.
Because Cinema 4D always struck me, and I think they're trying to rebrand it now, having seen kind of what they're doing. But, like, I always heard about them as, like, you'll need to do, this is the motion graphics 3D program when you need to do that type of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they come with templates. You know, they'll actually have a logo editor. There's like all this stuff that you can do really quickly. You know, and all these programs can pretty much render and do the same thing anyway now.
So yeah,
it's just
exactly.
Like, it's just really what you're used to and what you like, you know, using.
Yeah, they're all just tools.
Yeah, I was going to say, and if we did go the Cinema 4D way, we probably wouldn't be able to do what we can do now, though. We learned to do it the hard way.
Yeah.
Which ended up being helpful for you.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
So you're doing fine. So you got approached by Jeff to do the visual effects for a Call of Duty short. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not going to kill him here, but, you know, there was literally no budget. And, you know, the thing is, like, we had no idea what we were doing anyway. So we're just like, yeah, you know what? Just tell us what you want to do. Mm-hmm. I think one of our first projects was to, like, blow up a bridge. It was like the Don Valley Parkway on your way to work.
Up in Toronto.
Yeah, it's like one of the first times we ever used FumeFX, which is like this fluid simulation software that creates smoke and fire and stuff like that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we did not know how to use it.
To be fair, most people still don't.
Yeah, no,
when you're talking about simulating something so chaotic, like, you know, fluids and smoke and stuff, that's a kind of weird, there's a weird, like, black box voodoo aspect to it still, whereas everything, you know, right? Am I right here?
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, but VFX in general, like, and you know this, Freddie, you've worked in the VFX industry, VFX is pretty much a black box still. I mean, it's demystifying now because of, like, you know, Andrew Kramer and all the stuff that he's doing.
Yeah, but I can't tell you how many times, even on set, and this is like my deep, dirty secret for Video Game High School, when it's something that it's like causing a lot of heartbreak on set, where it's like, oh shoot, we need to do this, oh crap. And it's like, I'm literally sitting here and be like, this is going to take 20 minutes for them to do this and get this in place. We're losing light. We're not going to be able to shoot this. Like, I'll make the VFX call, which I'll be like, don't worry about it. Hold on. This will be the process, because you have to keep the mystique up, and I'm sure you guys know this is very important for us. We have to keep the mystique up. We'll say, hold on. Let me wait. And I look around. I squint a little bit at something. We can do this in visual effects. Let's just go. Let's go. Let's do it. And like, are you sure? Yeah. Oh, wait, hold on. No, we got. What time is it? What direction is the camera facing? Hold on. I'll take a couple notes. Good. We got. And we're like, what's going? Everyone's like, what is? And by the way, 90% of the time, there's no visual effects involved. It's just something that I just don't care about.
Put up some tracking markers, just like.
Yeah, just like one. The tracking marker thing, right? Okay, so let's talk about it real quick. Just again, this is going to get meandering. We'll get to your central storyline. But tracking markers on televisions, right? And I think there was this weird thing where growing up, all the like movie magic and all the like behind the scenes stuff, you saw them put tape marks and stuff on televisions for tracking markers.
Right. Like the X in the center.
Or the crash test dummy, like, circle with the plus sign in it. Yeah. That's, you know, which I learned later on that it's like, obviously depending on the shot, but a lot of the times actually isn't that necessary anymore. It's definitely less necessary than it used to be, where you kind of needed really hard contrasty points to track off of. And it was really funny because it's this weird thing where information doesn't flow down to the rest of the filmmaking world very fast. Like, where it's like, oh, hey, we got tons of really cool 3D trackers now. Our camera, we can map our camera position perfectly. We're done. But like, that information never got passed along. So like, there's still people being like, oh, but we need to put like big blue piece of tape over this, right? And they're like, where's your markers? Like, nah, you don't need it for this one. There's plenty of things. Like, but don't you need markers? And I feel like so much stuff where you don't need that anymore. Where it's like, visual effects supervisors weren't on set, being like, hold on, you can't roll yet. I need to put my markers in there. Then no one would hire them to just be on set visual effects supervisors, because so much of the stuff nowadays is just like, yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about that. Okay.
I would say like 80 to 85% of all the stuff that was a big deal back then, it really isn't a big deal now. And like, we almost have to like find excuses to like be on set now. Like, even on your set for Video Game High School, it's like, okay, we gotta get that Theta 360 to do HDRs. And whenever we bring that on set, everyone's gonna be like, yo, what's that? Because it actually looks
like
something cool.
It's a weird thing. Yeah, you guys have this weird double-sided camera that will do your HDR maps.
Yeah.
I've had so much fun with that camera, oh my gosh.
Not only does it save us like, you know, a ridiculous amount of time, it's just really cool. Like, he invented what, the 360 selfie?
That's all. I was just running around. I was literally running around to all your crew. Just like 360 selfie, and everyone's just like, what the hell is this kid doing?
I think we took more of those than actually like HDRs.
That's true. We're gonna create a website for 360 selfies. Yeah.
360selfies.com.
But it's also you know, the nature of like working with a director who like understands VFX. Like, you know VFX, so yeah. I think half the time, like, Freddie just makes us feel better. He's like, yo, Will, yo, get over here. Yo, what do I need to do here? It's like, in my mind, I'm like, you know very well what we need to do here, guy. Come on. But then I'll take the time. I'll explain myself.
Time, explain. But so. I remember watching, so now to back up to Find Makarov again, their mm-hmm. little tracking point diversion is over. Find Makarov was, I remember seeing that and being, because no one else, especially for YouTube stuff, no one else was bothering with anything even remotely visual effects related. I mean, let alone at the caliber that even Fine Makarov still stands up to today. So I remember seeing that it was on Kotaku, it hit all the blogs and all that stuff, and I was like, what is this? And I'm like, who are these guys? Because this came out, and it felt like it came out of nowhere. Especially the big thing on that was like, it was just all the it was all the fume work. It was all the stuff where I was like, whoa, this is match. And also just really being really impressed that you guys found the location that matched exactly that one part
Parts
of the game.
Yeah,
yeah, it was just like, whoa, where did they find this? But so what happened after that?
So just to really quickly just talk about that real quick, and the reason why it was crazy and the reason why you probably saw it, like Jeff and his company at the time, they created this viral, I guess, strategy to like, you know, mail dog tags, like bloody dog tags to all the game companies like Kotaku and like IGN and stuff like that. And they're like, what the hell is this?
It had the website on it.
Right, it linked to the countdown on the website, and, you know, it was like 3 days, and it created so much freaking hype. Everyone thought this was like the trailer to the in-game footage of Modern Warfare 3. So
Whoa,
there's a
really?
Lot of people saying this is they're finally releasing Modern Warfare 3 game trailer footage or whatever, and then he started giving pictures out, like, you know, like frames of like all the images, and people actually thought that was the quality of the game.
Whoa.
So they're like, oh my god, like new game engine, new everything, like everyone's like freaking out.
Whoa.
You know, and so
and it wasn't, by the way.
Yeah,
but yeah.
It totally wasn't. But it went viral. Like it crashed the Medieval Temple server like right when it launched. It had like 4 million views in 1 day, which even two or three days.
Yeah,
2 days. It now has like a collective, you know, view count of about 20 million, like since we launched it.
Something like that, yeah.
But yeah, that led to you know, lawyers from Activision calling Jeff and his company and be like, we're not upset at what you guys did. But what the hell is this? You know what I mean? And then like, you know, the stock actually went up. The stock actually went up like,
you affected 3%. Activision stock?
We think we did, because literally like in like over the weekend it went up like $300 million or something like that.
What?
Like,
no
was,
way.
We thought it was because like, of us. I don't know. But
it was crazy. But but then that led to like, I think Jeff got back to us like, you know, 3 months later. He's like, yo guys, we just got contacted by Activision. They want us to do something official. Mm. Now for the and that's when
Call
we did
of
Operation
Duty
Kickfish. XP,
yeah, right?
Call of Duty XP event. Yeah.
So for those of you who remember, and this is internet years we're talking about here, but Call of Duty XP was that live action Call of Duty event for Modern Warfare 2, right? 2.
No, yeah. it was for 3.
No, it was for 3.
Yeah.
Oh, was it for 3? Okay. Man, are you sure?
Positive, dude. Right, it's positive.
Okay. I got a shirt that says Modern Warfare 3 on it, so.
Okay, all right, okay, yeah. Sure, don't lie. But they did in LA. They had, like, paintball, they had zip lines, they had raffles, face painting. You could get your face painted. Yeah, it was basically a live-action carnival for Call of Duty, where every Call of Duty fan came out and hung around and marveled at how much it cost. And the big thing was the Jeep ride.
Yeah,
it was a simulated Jeep ride.
So cool. Yeah.
Where they had a Call of Duty Jeep. Somehow they managed to partner with Jeep to make a Call of Duty vehicle. Because when you think car purchasing demographic, you think Call of Duty. Of course, 14-year-olds are going to buy a car eventually with all the money that they
one
have.
One of my neighbors actually has one. Has one
really?
Of those Modern Warfare
what?
Jeeps.
Are you
yeah.
serious?
No way.
It's amazing.
Why?
I don't know.
Have you talked to him about it? Have you confronted him?
It's a lady.
Whoa, okay. Yeah. All right, hold on. I have a story then. Wait, have you talked to her at all?
No, I've never talked to her.
You need to, okay, first of all, you need to talk to her about that. And be like, hey, so. But when we were driving back from that, Brad and I were in a car and we saw a person with it. And we're like, oh, this got to be, wow. First of all, we've never seen it in real life. And it was like on the street. At the California Chicken Cafe, which is one of my favorite places to eat. And so we got up and we started talking to this girl. It was a girl who had it. And not to stereotype, but we had assumed that she was like, you know, Activision, you know, drives them around to events all the time. She was probably working an event for it, because why would anyone buy the, because she was like this, you know, tiny California, like, you know, bleach blonde hair, and we're just like, just doesn't seem like someone who'd buy a Jeep, let alone the Call of Duty branded Jeep. And we talked to her about it, and she was like, no, I like it a lot, and I've never played the games, and my boyfriend is, you know, teaching me the game, and like I'm playing with him now, but like, no, I got the car without knowing what the game was. And we're like, really?
What?
They spent
awesome.
All this money
okay,
to sell these cars?
But the boyfriend played, apparently.
I guess, but the boyfriend had nothing to do
maybe
with the purchasing.
Peer pressure.
The boyfriend had nothing to do with the purchasing decision of this Jeep, and it has like a winch on it for when you need to like tow out your buddies from the quack. Like, yeah, there's all these features on it that like you're just like, I don't know if this is the right car for this. And I don't. Who knows how many they sold? But I remember they had that Jeep event where they was like, you can get on a Jeep and take a tactical ride around this obstacle course, and the line for it was like 4 hours long. Or
there's
something.
A zip line
ridiculous.
Too, right?
There's a zip line.
Yeah.
That was
true.
It was pretty good though. You did it, right?
Did I
you
did. Get in the Jeep? Yeah, we did.
They like went out and like fired guns and.
They did. It was pretty intense.
It was.
And the funny thing was, and a little side story on that is a friend of mine was. They were like, hey, you know, we're doing this event. It's going to be a live. They were originally going to do that, actually, believe it or not, at the E3 that year. They were going to take people away from E3 and do it in like downtown LA. And like do a whole side thing. And I think they obviously were like, you know what, let's make it bigger, make it its own event. Eventually they made that call. But they were wondering, they're like, hey, do you know anybody who can maybe help on this? And I was like, oh, you know, I have a friend of mine who kind of, you know, has had some like theme park type of experience. And let me talk to him. And they're and he was like, yeah, the thing about this was they had no idea what they were doing. Like, because the first question he asked was like, well, what's your expected riders per hour? You know, I guess there's some metric that's
like
how many
10,000 people there too.
Yeah, but there's some metric for like how fast a ride can just get people through it. Amount of people per, I'm sure someone will correct me on the statistic for this, but it's like amount of people that can get through a ride in an hour, you know. And so like in Disneyland, like the crazy fast ones are things like Haunted Mansion and like Pirates of the Caribbean, which is just constantly like rotating, you know, and it's a big part of it. It's something like ridiculous. Those things can get like, you know, again, my numbers are probably completely off, but Benji, you should look this up. How many people can get through like Pirates of the Caribbean in an hour, whatever the metric is, but it's huge. They had no idea what the number was. They're like, I don't know. What's that mean? Like, so they had no idea. So the lines are huge. But I remember, so we're leaving the event and I hear someone shout my name from across the parking lot.
That was me.
over 2,000.
2,000 plus. All right. And I think they were like, I don't know, like, how many hundred?
Yeah.
And there's like 10,000 people there, right? So it's like, yeah, of course, 4 hour wait. I hear someone shout my name out, and you guys introduce yourselves as the people who are doing the sequel. And it premiered there, right? The Five Macro premiered over there, right?
Yeah,
So that was the first time. Yeah, it was pretty intense.
And just to rewind a little bit there, like, so was it you who noticed Freddy first?
Yeah, no, we were all. I think we were all standing there talking, like we're all pretty happy, pretty stoked that everyone enjoyed it, and. We see you walking by with your entourage, looking all cool and stuff.
I was actually like, there's no way he's gonna like come over.
You
here.
Had a bunch of security guards and stuff, and
yeah, right.
Ryan was motivated.
Well, everyone's like, oh, there's Freddy, check it out. And I'm just like, okay. I'm like, I actually had a whole bunch of booze in my system at the time, so I was like, I yelled out, hey, Freddy, come over here. And you're like, no, I'm okay. I'm a big shot.
We're busy, guys. We gotta go.
And I'm like, get over here. And so you came over, and yeah.
The rest is history
from there.
That was crazy because that was literally chance meeting in the parking lot at this Call of Duty event, which we, by the way, almost didn't go to because there were so many people going to be there. We're just like, do we really want to, like, he's like, where are we going to park? You're going to park like a mile away and all this stuff. So we almost didn't go. And that was literally the beginning of everything. Because after that, I was like, hey, we have this show that we're doing.
No, it wasn't even after that. It was right there. I gave you my business card and you're like, I might call you guys in a few months. I'm like, yeah, right. He's never going to call us. Freddy's not going to call us, right?
And that was for the first season of Video Game High School.
Yeah, and then he calls us. So yeah. It's crazy.
So that was how we met, by chance at the Call of Duty event. So thanks, Activision, I guess, for one, not suing you into the ground, and two, giving you that project. But then since then, we've done a lot of visual effects work together. Well, you guys have done a lot of work, and I've done a lot of typing into Google Docs. But
you guys actually did more visual effects shots than we did.
Yeah, but we did like lame-o visual effects shots, though. We did all the lame-o ones. So
we're thankful.
So the way Video Game High School has broken down for the last two seasons was we handle some stuff over on our side, and you guys handle the cool, crazy, awesome, fun stuff. Stuff like, oh, we need to paint out this piece of tape, or there's a crew member in that we'll handle, generally. And the stuff like kart racing fight, hit effects in the game, CG tank, and all that stuff are on your end. And this stuff looks amazing. This stuff looks fantastic. And you guys have started to do your own stuff in your own channel now, right?
Yeah, I mean that was really just a motivation of just like, you know, watching where you guys were going, and you know, we're also kind of like just a bunch of like, you know, aspiring creative directors and
yeah, directors we're kind of doing it the other way though, but
yeah, we're coming at it from a different angle. Like,
well, let's talk a little bit about the state of the visual effects industry, because I do think right now that you can't survive as a visual effects company unless one, you're not in America, because I think if you're in America, you're not ILM, you're in a tough spot. Because your work is going elsewhere, because the government essentially, you're basically competing against other governments subsidizing
pretty
their
much.
Industries.
Pretty much.
You know, Canada obviously is the one that everyone points to, but it's everywhere, to be fair.
It's like we're an ally when it comes to shooting there, but we're also the enemy because we're like stealing
stuff away. It's just like, everyone wants to go up to Canada to get all the production tax incentives for shooting, but then everyone is rallying against Canada for taking away visual effects work, blah, blah, blah. But that's the reality of the situation. And I think that even like a company like ILM is realizing that, because they did Rango and they owned and they did their own content. They're making their own content. And also, who did Ender's Game?
That was a Digital Domain.
Digital Domain. Yeah. Digital Domain has an ownership stake in Ender's Game. They didn't go on to that just as a visual effects company. I think even the big dogs are realizing, hey, we can't just make visual effects as a for hire industry anymore. We have to be content creators ourselves.
Yeah, you'd be surprised at to how many of the bigger visual effects companies are now producers on large scale. You know, feature films, but also independent too. Mostly.
Yeah, well, because how much of this? So I think this is what's crazy is when summer hits, those movies are more visual effects than real at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it, even to an extent where you won't even realize it, how much work and how many vendors go through a movie like any of the Marvel movies, any of those. It's like, it's ridiculous. And also, you listen to some of these guys talking about directing it, and they say, it's not even directing anymore. Everything's pre-visualized because there's nothing that's up to chance. They don't walk into a scene being like, all right, let's figure out how to shoot this. It's all been shot in CG already. They know exactly where the camera is.
Yep.
They know exactly how long the shot is. They know exactly how the coverage will work there, because so much of pre-planning is required in order to make sure that they get all the visual effects in properly and done right. So nowadays, directing is like, even just, it's just like, you can just do this and we know what the shots are, and as long as you get the pieces of it, it's just building, it's like building a Lego that the instructions are right there and you can't deviate from it, or it'll cost you millions of dollars.
Hey guys, how's it going? Jimmy Wong, aka Ted from VGHS here, telling you to check out shop.rocketjump.com. We've got brand new merchandise like iPhone cases and iPad decals to shirts, Blu-rays, and posters, including brand new Season 2 designs from our friends at Danger Brain. There's also the incredibly popular VGHS hoodie, and some of our older shirts are on sale for a great price. So make sure you check it out right after this podcast at shop.rocketjump.com. Thanks so much, guys.
Well, first of all, talk me through... What I'm curious about is, what is that like for you guys as essentially one of the, if from this country's perspective, enemies in terms of the visual effects industry, being a small, mid-scale visual effects house in Canada in that way? What has that been like? Because what was that like when the whole, like, you know, visual effects industry, everyone, let's change our Twitter icons to green screen thing that happened with Rhythm and Hues and stuff?
I mean, we're obviously supportive of the visual effects industry. Especially, I mean, you know, some of these Rhythm and Hues, you know, Digital Domain, ILM. You know, we look up to these companies, you know, wanting to go into visual effects. You know, these are the companies that we studied.
Yeah.
But we obviously don't have the luxury to get those jobs, those type of high-skill jobs. You know, everyone has to understand that, you know, it's a black box. It is kind of a black box for a reason, not just because it's voodoo. It's because to get photorealistic visual effects to look as good as it does in feature films, it's a very lengthy process.
Yeah.
You know, for us, we attacked visual effects from a motion graphics perspective, a motion graphics background.
From that angle,
from that angle. You know,
which, by the way, which came to bear in Video Game High School, because all the Pone Zone stuff was literally just what you guys were doing, right?
Right. That was something that we were very confident. I remember when you asked us, like, what can you guys do? Like, we can do really sick motion graphics.
No, I think so it was like, can you do motion graphics?
That's what
you
asked. That's right.
Yeah, I didn't know that was your background. So I was like, hey, so we have this fake show. It's supposed to be an ESPN style show.
That's right.
Can you do like some like intro bumpers? And you're like, yeah, we got that.
No, but you know, the funny thing is like, we've been actually, like, our skills have been getting better as, you know, Video Game High School is moving forward. So it's like, you know, every season you've wanted to do slightly more complex stuff.
It's been getting slightly more
complex
each time.
Yeah, so we've actually had to taught ourselves how to use Fume, how to do, you know, Rayfire, Krakatoa, and all these other programs that allow you to do simulations. But fundamentally, like, the principles going into the, you know, motion graphics, we've carried those over to visual effects. So, you know, when people, you know, in most visual effects companies, there's like 26 some odd passes that you have to render to actually get something to look photoreal for like a movie like, you know, Transformers.
Right.
Whereas we would just do, you know, what's referred to as like a beauty pass, which is just like straight render right out of the program, and let's tweak it in comp using, you know, you know, curves and adjustment layers.
That's, I think, the side, and to be fair, I think that's the side of the visual effects industry that a lot of people going into it don't think about. Well, they think this is gonna be cool. I'm gonna make this robot run around and stuff, and I'm gonna work on that. I'm gonna be on a team to animate this sick creature for Godzilla. What they don't think about is I'm gonna be working on this one shot for a month straight, and I'm gonna be tweaking it for a month straight, and that's the only thing I'm gonna be working on. And it's gonna be little things every single time, and little tweaks, and the shot will play out in the movie for about 30 or about, you know, 2 seconds, and it'll be done, and that'll be a month of my life just gone.
Yeah, and
I was just gonna say that. And about our team is a little bit different than what you'll find in a VFX house normally.
So what is normally found in a VFX house?
It's a dungeon.
A huge company of people that they only do one thing. Like they have a pipeline, they're specialists, they're doing one thing. When it comes their way, they work on that all day. I don't know how much they get done, but we come from a house of, like, we're about 11, 12 people, so we're actually quite small. Mm-hmm. And we're almost all generalists.
Yeah.
You know, so like, you know, so
So just for context, what is a big VFX company? What is a small VFX company? What is a medium-sized VFX company?
You know, I would say a medium visual effects company, well, you know, just knowing the companies in Toronto, anywhere between 25 to 50.
Okay.
But there's really no middle ground. And then all of a sudden there's like 100 to 200, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So, and some of them go, you know, some of them are like multi-location. So if you add it all up, you know, some companies can be like 1,000 people plus.
Right, and they have a place in New Zealand and then LA and then New York.
Tax credits, that stuff, right? Yeah. So they're trying to take, take advantage of the government subsidies as well. But I mean, it's for us as a visual effects company that is claiming that we are a visual effects company in Toronto, we have to take shortcuts because, like you said, like there's no way for us to compete with those big level companies. And to be honest with you, I don't even think that's like our makeup. Any like we don't really want to. The term is called, you know, pixel effers, right? Like we don't want to be those people who actually tweak every single pixel. We want to create stuff that is easy to execute, has all the impact that, you know, our directors are looking for. And just, you know, move on to the next project. Because otherwise you're working on the same project for a year.
There's diminishing returns, right?
Exactly.
For every hour you put in, you're getting a certain amount of value out of a shot. And at a certain point, you're not getting much for every hour that you're putting in. Mm-hmm. So the key, and you know, I think for us even as well, how we were able to do Video Game High School and the stuff that we do on a weekly basis is being at that sweet spot of, okay, putting in just enough that your return is maxed out, but you're also not like wasting time just getting diminishing returns on it. And I think a lot of times, because we had someone, you know, we had a friend of ours in here helping us out and just doing some roto work. Mm-hmm. And she was saying where she was working, and she was fantastic at it, where she was working, they would go zoom in 8x, quarter speed ping pong. So play it forward and backwards, and the people would check it to make sure it worked. I'm like, okay, first of all, nobody watches a movie at quarter speed, 8x zoomed in. So
he does, actually.
Well, he does. Oh, yeah.
Sometimes.
So, he goes to every VFX shot by frame.
Yeah. So normal people don't do that. So what if you don't see it, why are you spending that much effort doing that? I mean, it's thousands and thousands of dollars in order to get to that level of quality.
I think a lot of it is also us just habitually, like, because we didn't know what the standards were for visual effects going into it, we didn't actually know, you know, how far we had to go with stuff. So yeah, we would go to these places where, we're using this awesome new tool from After Effects called Rotobrush, like that came out like 2 years ago. And we're like, oh, this is like doing 90% of our roto. But then, you know, that the extra 10%, you still had to kind of, you know, go around it with an actual mask.
Yeah, and
I'd be like, you would come to our studio sometimes, you're just like, why are you guys doing that? Just don't do that. And I'd be like, why? Fred doesn't want that? And so we even didn't know, like, to what point we should go with it until, you know, an actual director would come to us and be like, we don't need that.
It's the lay person. Okay. It's where the lay person looks at it and says, I can't tell.
Exactly.
It's where my mom and dad look at it and be like, you did what? You did what with that tool? She was saying that Rotobrush, not allowed. Can't use it. I'm like, why would you not utilize the newest piece of technology? And he's like, well, no, the rotos aren't good enough. It's like, well, okay, guess what? the thing that we always say is if someone's watching this and they get put off by the fact that like a roto is off a little bit, then guess what? I bet your movie sucks.
Pretty
if your
much.
Movie's great, you don't see any of that. You're thinking about the character, you're thinking about the story. But if your movie sucks, you're like, oh, wow, man, that visual effects shot looks kind of crappy.
Yeah.
Then guess what? Your movie probably sucks. So the goal is not make sure the visual effects are perfect. It's make sure your movie doesn't suck so everything else doesn't need to be super expensive and super perfect in order to make up for it.
Yeah, like, I mean, a good example of that is looking at, like, you know, like animatics done for like Third Floor, and like if you look at that stuff, it's
what's Third Floor?
They're like a previous company, right? And there's all these I think it's Third Floor. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's definitely these companies that do all the previs. For Pacific Rim, Mr. X, a team of six people did the previs for Pacific Rim. Six people. So when you look at that animation, you look at some of that stuff when they release it, it looks awesome. Like you're like, oh my gosh, this you know that shot's when it's finished, it's gonna look amazing. Yeah. So actually, we want to do some previews for Video Game House. I think we just didn't have time, but that would be something that we would love to do, like in the future.
Previs. Well, that's the direction that all that stuff is going, is pre-visualization. And I guess it's one of those things. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was also going to say, but that's why working with our relationship that we have with you is so great, is that, you know, you're about, you know, getting the right amount of quality in the right amount of time.
Be straight. It's because we're all lazy. We're all lazy and we don't want to spend all our time rodoing.
It's true. But also, we've worked on some feature stuff. We've worked on some TV shows. We love working with you because the creative freedom that we have as well. You actually give us, you know, you let us throw our ideas into the mix and
so most of the time when you're talking about dealing with, say, a TV show, what do they get? What do you get from them, like in terms of shot, and what are the notes? Because I don't even know this.
We worked on Transporter, the series, the HBO series.
Okay.
And it was it's crazy.
Not the movie, the HBO series.
Yeah, the HBO series.
It's huge.
In
it's
Canada.
It's super famous. No, not in Canada. In like Germany, it's like crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for some reason.
I was kind of being sarcastic, though.
No, but it is huge. For some reason, in that one country.
It's like the David Hasselhoff of TV.
It's because he drives a BMW in Germany. He's like, yes, and that's a BMW.
It's an Audi. It's an Audi. We animated it.
Oh, is it an Audi?
Yeah, it's an Audi.
Okay. It's owned by the dirty Italians. Is it? Yeah, Audi's owned by Porsche now, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know any of this stuff. It's Volkswagen. No, Audi's Volkswagen, but Volkswagen is... Oh, Volkswagen owns Porsche.
Oh, really?
I think.
I like Volkswagen. That was actually one of our first tastes at trying to do visual effects in
for
more
a
of like
show,
a feature.
Yeah.
If we were to do visual effects for features, this is sort of like how the process would be.
Okay.
And honestly, the only thing we really corrected was our rotoing.
Oh, really?
like everything else is like, okay, yeah, we know how to light cars. We know how to do this, but okay, let's just make sure that our cleanup is top notch, because those are the things that they're going to notice. And it got nominated for a VES award. So
VES is the Visual Effects Society.
Yeah,
right.
So... That's, I mean, I, you know, and that's like a method of visual effects, a pipeline that is not commonly used in visual effects houses.
Yeah.
Guaranteed, they don't do it the way we do it.
And then a quick note on the VES awards, because everyone's always like, how come this movie didn't get the Oscar nomination? You don't look to the Oscars for visual effects.
No.
When it comes to those technical categories, the Oscars are, you might as well replace best with most. So it's not best sound design, it's most sound design. Best costume? No. Most costumes are the winner. Every year, without fail, it's not the ones that win, the technical ones are, it's the most sound mixing, the most visual effects. And the winner is this one. If you want to see what the industry actually thinks from insiders, look at the VES nominations every year. And those ones break it down from everything from visual effects in a video game, visual effects in TV series, visual effects in an action movie, visual effects in a visual effects oriented feature. So it's like
totally.
They break it down in a really, really good way. And
I don't think they have best roto.
They don't have best roto. Not
that's
yet.
Just a given, man. If you can't do that, you're not going to be invited. You know,
that's like giving an actor like an award for not blinking.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't do that. But those are the best places to see what the actual visual effects industry thinks about what's good and what's good work in it. Which actually kind of takes me to another question, which is, it's such a, well, first of all, it's going to be, by the time this comes out, this advice might even be different. But if I'm a kid and I want to do visual effects, what am I supposed to do right now? How do I start this? How do I get into it? What should I focus on? Should I do animation? There's so many questions on that. And it's funny because I hear that, like, people ask me this question a lot. And I'm like, you shouldn't ask me because I'm not that good at visual effects. Like, I'm not actually a visual effects guy. That's my response. It kind of raises in pitch at the end of it. But there's so much stuff that you can do now. And, you know, I think that I'm curious to hear what your advice would be to aspiring like ours, or people who want to get into this world.
You're giving that one to me?
Go for it.
I have mixed feelings.
Okay.
But most of the time I'd say, you know, just play around. Get the programs. Get the ones you can download for free. Not
Blender. Blender
is great. It's open source.
It's got a pretty nasty learning curve, I'll be honest with you, though.
Well,
Yeah, but like to be fair, you know what else
has? Free.
Like, okay, yeah, but like to be fair, you know what else has a nasty learning curve? Fucking Dark Souls 2 has a nasty learning curve too. Right? People play that, okay? You know what else has a really hard learning curve? Crusader Kings 2, all right? These are all, like, people are somehow are okay to deal with learning curves in games, and it's more frustrating, so maybe, I don't know, take that perseverance.
The great thing about nowadays is, like, even 10 years ago, they didn't have the type of community that we have nowadays to actually learn these programs. Like, it was hard enough to even find these programs.
So Visual Effects for After Effects, I would say, is Video Copilot.
Yeah, Video Copilot, it's super easy. The tutorials are awesome.
Where
easy
else?
To follow.
Digital Tutors. We have an account for Digital Tutors. We renew it every year because it's, you know, people current in the industry. And virtually every single program, including After Effects, is covered. We use 3D Studio Max, Blender. Heck, they even have tutorials for Inventor if you want to invent stuff and 3D print them. Yeah,
really.
Like, so digital tutors, I mean, it's a little more expensive, but like compared to what you'll be paying at school, I would say you're going to learn a hell of a lot more spending $399 versus, you know, the $5,000 or $10,000 you would spend going to an actual school to teach it. So those are my feelings. Like, back in the day, I would say, okay, look, if you're going to a visual effects school for post-secondary education and you need to grow up and become an adult, then you should still go to school and socialize with people. But like, in terms of learning, you don't need to pay money to go to school. Yeah, I'm sorry, pay money to learn how to do visual effects or animation or compositing, whatever
it's all,
you want to do.
You're saying all,
or
it's
filmmaking
all
for that matter.
To be fair, anything in the film industry, you don't need a degree for.
I would say it's really all about how passionate you are about it. If you're not very passionate and it doesn't really doesn't spark your interest, then you're going to have problems. But if you actually want to sit down and learn the tutorials and go outside and shoot stuff yourself and play around with the programs as a kid, then, you know, that's the best way to do it.
The tool sets are all available to you.
Everything's there.
And so, usually for me, like, I'm usually the one that's manning, like, the social media, so I get this question
pretty much
all the time.
Yeah.
The two top questions I get is, like, what do you use, and, like, how can I get into it, or what is that song at the end of your trailer? But
and by the way, real quick, the question, what do you use,
is
a really interesting one to me, because it's literally the same question as, but what guitar does Jimmy Page use? And if I get that guitar, maybe I can just go to Jimmy Page. Or what guitar does Slash use? Which is why, like, Gibson and Fender can sell the artist models of these, because it's this weird, well, it's not even weird, but it's a very natural thought of, like, well, if I'm going to be that good, I need to get the tools that these really good people are using, because if they have it, then that's a barrier that I don't have to cross, right? That's the sort of idea. So it's like, well, if I want to be good, then I better use After Effects, better use 3D Studio Max. Which is not true.
More than that, though, like, I think, I mean, just to add to that, like, you're gonna have students feeling pressured to go to school for this, because what they teach in the schools is what, you know, the same pipelines that you would be accustomed to learning in an actual visual effects company. So if you want to become a student of visual effects with the intention of getting a job at ILM or one of these other big upper echelon companies, then you're going to want to learn the method.
You need to know their methodology.
Yeah, you need to know that pipeline. The pipeline that we're talking about is the guerrilla style, do-it-yourself, you know, pipeline for visual effects, which is use whatever the hell you want, whatever the hell you can get your hands on, and just try to emulate what you see in films. That's really what it is. You know, like, we're going to be doing this series on our channel real soon. We're just going to take this really awesome visual effects shot from a movie we love, and we're just going to reproduce it. But we're going to do it the way we do it. In the most bare bones, cost effective, you know, time efficient way possible, and see if it holds up.
That's interesting, because what you should do is with that, because if you can find it, you know, either CineFX, which is a visual effects publication, like an actual one you can hold in your hands, and I do recommend that anyone interested in visual effects should subscribe to it. They even have an iPad app for it too.
Oh, it's so good.
It's really good, because it gets right into what programs they use, how many people was on it, who are the people, what did they go through the process. It's a really good detailed look at, like, visual effects from big movies. Every single quarter, it's a quarterly publication. Every single quarter, they pick, you know, some big visual effects movie and they go through it. And it's really interesting. You learn actually quite a bit from just what's the current state of the art in terms of what the programs are being used at these top houses and how they're applying them. And then even in some cases, you can see that the state of art is a little bit janky. Like, I remember the episode for the publication for Captain America, first Captain America. They were talking about how did they do the effect where they took the guy and shrunk him down, made him scrawny, and then made him huge, right? And like, if you read between the lines, they're like, what they wrote was pretty much, we have no idea how to do this, so we shot it in so many different ways just in case, and we ended up using everything in different ways. That was like literally it.
Totally.
Like, they were like, okay, so he's standing there, we would have a body double, recreate the actions on set, we would also do a full CG scan just in case, and we also did a face replace or something, and it ended up being that no one technique for every single shot was it. And then there was some where this, like, you're like, man, they screwed up. Because there's one where they're like, yeah, there's one part where he's crawling under barbed wire, mm-hmm. and they're like, we had to, and it's, you almost hear the guy sighing as he's like talking about, where it's like, what they should have done, they shouldn't have had barbed wire in the first place. What they shot had barbed wire in it. So they're like, okay, so we had to paint around the barbed wire, digitally recreate underneath it and get that mask over, blah, 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 and all that stuff. But it's a really good publication as far as that stuff is concerned.
It's great.
So hold on, real quick, what are the online communities that you would recommend? Any other ones?
That's a good question.
I mean, there's tons of forums and stuff out there, right?
Yes,
I mean, you know, FXPHD is like,
FXPHD is
such
very
an
good
awesome
too.
Place.
Yeah,
because
they
also have a channel.
But even the communities, if you have a question and you go out in the forums
and
ask them, like, there's tons of people that are willing to help.
FXPHD,
YouTube,
yeah. YouTube as well. FXPHD is really good, I think. I think if you're going to spend money, and I'll say this, if you want to go to a studio, if you want to go to ILM, you want to work for the big guys, the big dogs, which is, again, nothing wrong with that. It's good work, and it's also secure work. That's the other side of it that people don't think about. I would say place like you know, the schools are good places for it. I've seen a lot of the work coming out of Noman, and these guys in LA, Noman School of Visual Effects. Oh. And those guys are, if you want to get a job, you go to Noman. Like, Noman places people into jobs, and the graduates get work. So if that's what you're looking for, then yes, that's where you want to go. Full Sail also, I think, has a program. If you're going to stay online, if you're a good learner online, some people aren't good at teaching themselves, head to a place like FXPHD or, you know, Video Copilot, teach it yourself. It's harder because there's something to be said for being able to, like, talk to someone and get that advice, right? Like, there's a huge part of it, which is, like, for what I've learned, which was just, like, oh, hey, you know, living with Sam and Nico for a while, just being like, hey, how do I do this in After Effects? Sam walks over, teaches me, and I'm done. That took two minutes, as opposed to 2 hours of trying to figure out exactly for my specific situation.
Yeah, and that's why I wish that just every kid out there could go into, like, a VFX house and be an intern for a couple months. You know, you learn
so much.
Just
questions, just like, be able to ask people in person. Yeah.
I went to school for character animation, and I spent 3 years on it.
Yeah.
And I came out being, you know, a pretty good character animator, but I didn't do anything else.
Oh, yeah.
Like, since then, how much character animation have I done? Not very much, but I've learned pretty much everything else just working through the system.
Yeah. So. But you are the resident character animation guy. Like, well,
that's true.
We go to you.
And I have the sense that you will be doing quite a bit of that coming up. For Video Game High School Season 3, because we have a sequence there that will need some character animation, but also for a super cool...
I was actually going to get the interns to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't do it anymore.
Yeah, I learned it. Doesn't mean I do it now. Come on, dude.
Come on. 3 years, you know, veteran.
What did I just say?
So the most recent thing that you guys have done, and it's up on your channel right now, and also has its own snazzy website, is something for Titanfall.
No, you weren't allowed to talk about this, dude.
No,
I'm just joking.
Oh. Titanfall. You guys are doing a thing for it, and I don't know if anyone even knows exactly what it is, but there was a live-action trailer that you did that you're going to be putting up a breakdown for. When's that breakdown coming up?
That breakdown's coming out probably
end of the week, I would
end
say.
End of the week,
okay,
yeah,
so by
yeah.
the time this comes up, there will be a visual effects breakdown for this insane trailer that you guys shot in how many days?
That's a funny story. So what is the story? Really quick.
What is this Titanfall thing?
No one really knows. I mean, like, everyone has, like, speculation of, like, where this, like, how this happened.
Yeah.
Pretty much what we did, we were actually prepping for Video Game High School 3, honestly. We were working on this troll sequence. And, you know, Brian comes in and he's like, you know, we gotta, or was it you? Like, we gotta make a Titanfall film or something like that. And then you came and was like, I'm gonna write them an email. And then all of a sudden,
I played the beta and I freaked out.
Right, you played
the beta.
Was
great. Yeah.
And we're like, guys, we don't have time for this. And then somehow these guys convinced us to, like, go outside and just shoot this crazy sequence. It literally took us about 10 minutes.
And it's on the street right in front
shots.
Of your place.
Yeah.
It was really surreal in how fast it happened, because, like, Ryan kind of comes in, he's like, we should make a video of this.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay. Yeah. And so I run downstairs, I send off an email like, hey, listen, Respawn, whoever this is, info@respawn.com.
Yeah. No way. You emailed their info
email?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I didn't know, like, because, like, they're, at the time, they're just lock and key. You, like,
yeah,
you
don't
there's
know.
No in.
No.
So I'm like, hey, listen,
can I get your blessing on making a video maybe? Like we'd love to do something for you guys, but anyways, get back to me.
We didn't even know if like we were gonna actually meet with
and
them.
And you ended that email with a question mark.
It was definitely
yes. back
it was
to
just,
me.
It was literally like mark. If you could see me do this, it was literally that.
Yeah.
And so literally like they get back to us in a few hours. And
must have been a slow day.
It was, I don't know, man. Slow day for them. I don't know.
It was your like beta, so I don't know.
8 days to launch.
They
must
like,
have seen your senior stuff.
They were just like, yeah, sure. Like, just send us more details. Like, tell us what you want to do. And then I run upstairs and I'm like, Will. I'm like, something just happened.
And I'm just like, oh my God.
He wakes
and like,
up.
And this guy like, was this guy was like asleep. Neck deep, like in just all of his work. And he's like, what do you want, Brian?
What are we going to do?
You're like, why did you do this?
Yeah.
And then literally, like, so yeah, the next day we're like, oh my God, what are you? And these two are just like, for the entire day, they were just like scheming, like, how the hell do we do this?
Yeah.
And they literally just like, at the end of the day,
by the way, it was
like,
the coldest freaking day in Toronto of all of winter.
At the time, it was like negative degrees. And they're just like, F it. So like, I just see these two just run out the door with a camera. And Ryan just like, he puts on like my backpack and like all this green gear.
These guys are putting tracking markers on his back. Yeah. And we're like, that's not gonna do anything for us.
We ran for like 10 minutes and my hands were like frozen. But
you had a Nerf thing on it?
Yeah. So we did it after we did that, we got the go ahead. We showed them what we did.
Yeah.
And they're like, we want
how
more.
How much time went
36
by
hours later, no sleep. We were literally editing it on the plane. We land, we show it to them, and they're like, we're not allowed to tell you guys this, but this is freaking amazing. So then it's like, and we're about, and you know what we want you to do is we want you to actually help us get something ready for the launch, the Twitch feed
so
launch.
So this,
is,
how many this days? Was
South by Southwest.
February 29th, this went down. And they're like, do you want to like maybe just clean it up a little bit and then and then like launch it at South by Southwest? And we're like, yeah, okay, but we're not just like a little bit. We're going to do everything. And they're like, no, you can just clean up. And like, we'll probably release like the test sometime down the line.
Like what we at, yeah.
But,
shot, yeah.
But like, we're like, no, we're going to go to the nines with this here.
Yeah, and, yeah.
It's like four and a half days of just constant, like all of us pretty much sleeping at the studio. And then,
super fast turnaround.
During
looks,
that whole
and
time.
It was amazing.
Thank you. It's
during that whole time we set up your Titan is ready, which is pretty much where all the information, TitanReady.com, where all the information is going to go and flood to, where we're going to make all of our pretty much create that community there for all the.
By the way, apparently we're supposed to be making a multi-million-dollar web series like any sec, you know, in, over the.
What's it
the
called?
Summer.
Video game.
Something. Like video that. Game something. I don't know.
It's video game Titanfall.
But yeah, so you guys are busy, and you got a upcoming project with the blessing of Respawn in the Titan, something to do with Titanfall, which I can't wait to see and hear more about.
And we have a pretty awesome other one. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
There's another one coming up.
You guys are working.
You have something to do with.
Something, yeah. You guys are going to be helping us out with the visual effects for season 3. And that's why you're in town even, is because tomorrow we're going to head up to El Tejon and shoot some of these fancy sequences.
Is it
going to
snow again? Because that's why we left Toronto.
No, it shouldn't snow. And you guys have a visual effects channel of your own content. You've done pretty hilarious and awesome collaborations, not only with us. One of my favorites, one recently, Lizzie Sterling, that you guys did, where did the visual effects for.
We did the visual effects.
You guys
effects,
did the visual effects for
a, yeah, we did a
her last music video, and which is also on her channel, but also you did a little collaboration with her at the whole visual effects thing with that, and it was great. It was hilarious. So if you guys are interested in visual effects channels, the best one out there right now, in my opinion, youtube.com/playfightvfx. I look forward always to what you guys put out. Thank you again for stopping by. And
thanks,
also,
man.
Thank you.
For having us.
And also, thanks so much for your work on Video Game High School, and hopefully some more and interesting stuff down the future. And yeah.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you.
I ended that sentence super weak, but that's okay. Anyway, that's enough talk about visual effects.
Wait, you got to end it with the laughs, guys. You guys have been practicing on these laughs.
What laughs?
The high-low laughs. You guys just hear this. Like, I'm
what's
so
your real quick? Your social. We're,
listen, you can find all of us Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. It's at PlayFightVFX.
PlayFightVFX.
Instagram. Everything.
Check them out. These guys are great. Real quick, thank you, Benji, for producing, and also, of course, looking up random crap that I need to look up on Google. Always there in a clutch. And of course, Alex Reeves, Point Blue Studios, for recording and engineering these bad boys. Show me your laughs. Finish them with the laughs.
Do it. You got to do it.
I don't do the laugh, he does, so.
Ha, no, okay.
You guys are jackasses.
All right, we're done.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Hit up the social, guys. They're great. Check them out. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks a lot.